Hello, I'd like to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. I'm Terry Thornton, Curator of Education, and it's a real privilege to be here tonight. Tuesday Evenings is a weekly lecture program. I know that we have some people in the audience tonight that may be unfamiliar. We have 10 lectures in the fall and 10 in the spring, and I would like to take this occasion to invite you back next week for a conversation between art historian Dr. Francis Colpit and Vernon Fisher, the artist whose work is featured in the museum's current exhibition, Vernon Fisher, Kmart Conceptualism. Next Tuesday's presentation stems from studio visits and conversations between the two as Colpit worked on her informative and insightful essay that is in the beautiful monograph Vernon Fisher, recently published by UT Press and available in the Modern store. Vernon has also, I want you to know, has also graciously agreed to give Sunday's 1 p.m. tour. And I think this is a rare and wonderful opportunity that I encourage you not to miss. If you've ever wondered about any aspect of Fisher's loosely narrative paintings and installations, this is your opportunity to have him in your space and ask him questions. And then, of course, that'll be followed next Tuesday by the conversation between he and Dr. Colpit. In addition, and I appreciate you letting me make a few announcements here, in addition, I want you to know that we have started round two of the graduate student gallery lectures. They began tonight, and they run every Tuesday evening at 6:15, and then on Saturdays at 1 p.m. through November 16th. And if you've come to those, you know they're a real treat. And as I said last week, I think it's so great for us all to support the graduate students in their efforts with this program. So I invite you back for those as well. There are so many program opportunities that time does not allow, so I'll just take this opportunity to invite you to visit the Modern's website, where you can keep track of what interests you and mark your calendars accordingly. Tonight, for instance, I congratulate all of you for making the decision and the arrangements to be here for what promises to be a very engaging program and unique opportunity to learn about Cowboy Stadium's world-class art collection directly from the source, or the sources. The Modern's chief curator, Michael Opping, who served on the advisory committee for this collection, is here tonight with Jerry and Jean Jones, who, of course, require no introduction as owners of the Dallas Cowboys, and who I have to say we greatly appreciate for giving us time out of their very busy and demanding schedule to do this tonight. The discussion will be on the process and issues of a stadium art collection that, as to my knowledge, is unmatched in quality and, as such, has received critical acclaim for its serious choices, its presentation, and its function as public art. Before I turn this over to these very capable people, I would be amiss if I don't mention that while you can't take the art in the stadium home with you, you can own this very beautiful publication, which I believe has just recently hit the shelves, and I invite you to check it out. We have signed and unsigned copies in our bookstore, so again, I encourage you to check those out. You will find in here features on each of the artworks and the artist who made them, details on the architecture. It also includes an introduction by Michael Opping and essays by the architecture critic David Dillon and the art critic and writer David Pagel. So that was a necessary and completely justifiable advertisement. So if you would, with that, please join me in welcoming Michael Opping and our esteemed guest.
Can everybody hear us? Are the mics on?
Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Okay, great.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
I want to preface this discussion very briefly with just a couple of comments, and that is, I have been asked to be on a lot of Art in Public Places programs over my 35, 36 year career, in situations that are far less complex than this one was, and they've gone horribly bad. And I had actually, as my wife will acknowledge, said that I would never be on another Art in Public Places program. And then the Joneses approached me about doing this, and after meeting them, I realized that they are really gamblers, and they're smart gamblers. And so I took the gamble with them, but there are those here tonight who were on the advisory committee, but I think all of us would agree that the process was such that we suggested ideas. They went home as a family and intelligently sussed out what was the right thing to do for their context. So they need to get the credit for this world-class collection. And so I'd like to start, though, by talking about the architecture, which I think led to the art. And let me just briefly say that this thing is a quarter of a mile long. It encloses 104 million cubic feet of space. The Statue of Liberty can stand up underneath the roof structure. This is a big thing. I guess the first question is, and I'll direct this to you, Jerry, at first, how do you decide what kind of a style you make something that big?
Well, first of all, Michael, I'm disappointed. We had visited about his comments before my introduction. And he said, do you think they know what a Dallas Cowboy fan I am and how interested I am in the Cowboys? And I said, maybe not, but you can say that. But I said, the other thing that I give you liberty to say is that I do follow the team. And tonight, if you have a question, and this was his suggestion, but I agreed, about the Dallas Cowboys, when we have questions, let Michael answer it. He knows more about them than I do. It's getting a little tough out there if we don't win some football games. But, Michael, we, at least personally, I've enjoyed getting to be around people that inspire you. And it goes from there. And the best things that I've ever gotten to be a part of, it's ironic, I had associated with very smart people and very passionate people. And I should have guessed. I asked Michael earlier, I said, has anyone ever delved, put a toe in the pool, has anyone ever delved over and gotten an interest, no matter what perspective they're coming from, and really had to seriously think about the world of contemporary art? Has anybody that you know ever gotten involved and that be just the initial beginning, and they just got hungrier and hungrier and hungrier the more the knowledge they got of it? And for me, on an individual basis, that's happened to me right here with this stadium. Certainly, Michael, to answer your question, architecturally, we wanted something that we took some risks there. We knew we wanted it to contemporary, but we also wanted to do some things that had never been done before. Engineering-wise, from the aesthetics on the outside, we visited places all over the world, not just sports venues, but we visited airports all over the world. We visited buildings all over the world. And we really had an idea years before we built this stadium what we wanted to accomplish. This is not crass, I have to say this. Only 7% of NFL fans have ever been in an NFL stadium. Ever been in one. That's not 70, that's 7%. And it's staggering.
It is staggering.
And the facts are, the interest, well, and I believe it, I will tell you, it's misplaced, and I'm not trying to be humble here. It's misplaced. They do it for war heroes, ticker tape parades, and people that win games. That's misplaced. People that create jobs, people that heal people, people that teach, they should have those ticker tape parades and recognize. But I don't have time to turn that around. I really don't. It's a culture. and it is there. So how can you somehow take what the Cowboys are about and all this visibility, and how can you make an impact and in the initial thought with that stadium? How can you do some things that have never been done before with that stadium? And that's what we attempted to do with every aspect of it. And we wanted to go over into the other world beyond the sports pages. We wanted to get over into the architectural page. Mm-hmm. Salvation Army taught us that. We do the Salvation Army annually on Thanksgiving Day. And it has really patted on the back a lot of great volunteers. Millions of people that do Red Kettles. Why can't you do that in architecture? Why can't you do that, if you will, we're here tonight? Why can't we do that in contemporary
art? You also take a chance in doing that, of course, particularly with your clientele. I mean, this is the shot of Cowboy Stadium versus Rangers Ballpark. And obviously Rangers Ballpark went retro. They decided we want the old-fashioned ballpark. We want it to look old-fashioned. We want our sports fans to feel comfortable. You all decided to go ultra-contemporary. And I'm just curious, do you think that is a function of the nature of baseball? Is it a more old-fashioned sport versus football? Is football more forward-looking?
Well, I think that you've got a depth of tradition. We are so proud of these Rangers, and I know everybody in the room are. They're playing the Yankees that have been around, excuse me for arm waving, but 100 years. I don't think that's an exaggeration. There's a traditional thought that is there. The game of pro football is a contemporary thing. It is an advent of television, for being right. practical about it. And Gene and I, when we looked at our home, we are more traditional in our home. And I guess possibly you might say if you looked in our home, there could be traditional tastes with, and we love it. But sports by its very nature, and to some degree contemporary art by its very nature, is a expression, it has a future. It has a future. Maybe it's because it's early for contemporary art, but it has the promise of the future ahead of it. And sports is about blind faith. It's about listening to people that will tell you if you'll work hard, you're a skilled person, get out here, work hard, do your business right, and good things will happen for you. And so we decided this stadium just had to be for the Dallas Cowboys. It had to be contemporary.
Well, you know, in the old days, when I was young, architects were really not interested. I mean, serious architects were not interested in stadium architecture because they thought they were just going to be big macho barnyards. Now, all of a sudden, every major architect wants to do a stadium. I mean, you've got at the top there, you have Foster and Partners did... Wembley Stadium. You've got Ai Weiwei and Herzog de Meuron did the National Arena in Beijing, and then you have Allianz Arena in Munich. I mean, all the architects want to do this. And you guys were smart enough, I think, to tap into that, get a good architect without getting an architect with too big of an ego. But I also know that, you know, the architectural thing was what it was, but I know, Gene, you were involved a lot with details, with some facade choices, with stuff that was going on around outside the stadium. And, I mean, I think you had a lot to do with what makes this stadium feel softer. I mean, was that something that you deliberately took a choice in and wanted to do and...
When it came to the architecture of the stadium, you know, Jerry really had his vision about the building. And our entire family was involved with him. But he really has such a passion for pretty things and beautiful buildings, and he recognizes that. And I think for his fans, he wanted to have something that every fan would be proud of. And as a group, we decided to go the contemporary route, but Jerry led the pack on that, and he wanted the glass curtain wall, and he wanted the beautiful, pretty glass with the frit in it. He really drove that for us, and we were all there to support him and get involved with all the details that came, you know, on the interior. But I think the facade of the building was really what Jerry wanted, and he conveyed that to our architects, and, you know, they took that from his leadership. And then we all dissected it and tried to make it as perfect as we could as a group.
That is a very modest answer. That's so modest. I'm looking at what we're all looking at right now. If I could share with you the times that and the hours that Gene spent, that normally, that area right there is normally a concrete concourse in most stadiums,
right,
in great new stadiums. Go to New York, and I'm not building this up to push anything down. That is a concourse. That is, at best, scored concrete with maybe stain or maybe integrated color in it. Gene was simply asked to take the fact, since we've gotten millions of it to buy, take something that we've already see that at $6 and $7 a square foot, you're talking $20 million. Figure out what we can put in terms of the hardscape or the floor, the interior. Think of how we can do this. Anybody can spend money. Anybody can spend money. Think of how we can do these things and it be incorporated within a value system that makes sense. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know that's the art of the deal,
right,
is to get it done at a level that makes some sense. And the exterior, and Gene is the only one. Charlotte, I think, might have been the examples you gave up there, those three stadiums. Gene has walked more about, she's been to Wembley three times. She was at the Bird's Nest. So she's seen more of it than anybody in this organization has, more of those places, looked at the kind of things that we wanted to do with all three of those. But at the end, certainly we all agree. You know, we built this stadium and had a chance to stop the scope of it when we went into the greatest economic crisis that any of us in this room or maybe on this earth have ever seen. We heard about it from our daddies and our granddaddies, but we haven't been involved in one. And it was called this downturn in the economy. We had the opportunity to cut almost 50% of the costs and not get in a 3-inch headline in the Fort Worth Star or the Dallas Morning News, because all we had to do was lay a bunch of people off out there or cut it back, and you can imagine what those headlines would have been. But we instead increased the scope. We increased the scope of the stadium. The idea was there's only one time. This isn't a dress rehearsal. There's only one time to go around, and that's your time. And so if you can figure out a way to make it something special. Plus, we believe that this is the ideal way to say economic stimulus package. I say that tongue-in-cheek,
Jerry,
but that's what we wanted to do with the stadium.
I mean, that's also a calculated gamble as well. I mean, and what's curious to me is that, I mean, some of the rooms in this stadium, which I have been to a number of times, are astoundingly beautiful. And one of the things I ask myself is, has the demographics of the NFL fan changed? Or are you trying to change them? Or, in other words, you're putting a lot of money into things that 25, 30 years ago the NFL fan would say, "What? Do you think this is?" I don't want just the sort of cliche, "This is the future of the NFL."
No.
But I mean, I think it's complicated, and you're putting a lot of money into it.
Mike, first of all, we wanted a stadium that had great accessibility. Our fans told us that give us the more accessibility to the stadium. To put it, can you avoid traffic as much as you possibly can? The ingress, egress, those kinds of things. Parking, those are the standard things that we would look at with stadia, given a legitimate choice of where we could put it. But here's the deal. We have done the NFL a really A job, maybe an A-plus job, of getting people to watch television and watch our games. We are the number one programming in the NFL. Mm-hmm. The number one programming there is. Dancing with the Stars, all of them, it's there. Now again, even with Emmett on there, we can get that one there too. But seriously, and what has this got to do with your question, Mike, is the NFL cannot become a studio game. It can't become a game that the way it's followed and watched is by watching television. So the very thing, I'm chairman of the television committee in the NFL, the very thing that we cleverly, resourcefully try to make it happen for people to have the greatest eyeballs and ratings, by the way, the game we played the other night against the Minnesota Vikings was the number one watched game this year in all of NFL football, with that there. What's that got to do with this stadium? Our stadium can't become a studio game. Mm-hmm. There's got to be real meat on the bone. The commentators want fudge there, and they want it to be something special. And when we're watching it on television, we need to somehow kind of feel like we're there, we're involved. I just said very few percentage-wise are there, but how can they be involved? And that, in a big way, Mike, is why we're sitting here tonight.
Right.
Is how do you cross over those disciplines? How do you create something interesting enough so that Al Michaels and John Madden, and boy, they can allude to some things that are even a little foreign to them, but boy, they create a more widespread interest in what this is about. And so this is an attempt not to have a studio game. We need to, let me arm wave here, and I'm going to take the liberty with our group. We need the pageantry of the Colosseum of Rome.
Right.
We need the crowds. And you need to know, or a fan needs to know, that has nothing to do about art or architecture. They need to know that that's going on so they can vicariously feel like they're there in it.
Well, it's a good thing that you're on the TV committee because you have the largest television screen in the entire NFL. There is no question about that. This is the largest high-definition television in the world, isn't it? I mean, this covers almost the entire 100-yard span.
There's only one bigger. Not bigger, but the same size. And it's on the other side of the board.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Thank you for the softball, Mike.
Head of the TV committee. I get it. Well, while I've got you here tonight, I can't resist pitching a couple of ideas for this TV screen. You know, we're not in a meeting. We haven't called an official meeting. But there is an artist I know named Jenny Holzer who has worked with these jumbotrons before. This is a shot of a piece she did at Giant Stadium in San Francisco. And sometimes her truisms are very mild, like you must have one grand passion. Sometimes, as at Caesar's Palace, they're a little more biting. And the one that I thought would be perfect for you, Jerry. But that's all about the future. Let's talk about what we've done in the past. And in the past, I think Gene can address this very well. When we first started this process of building a collection for the stadium, there was a kind of developmental narrative. And that narrative, as I see it, was you were buying works that kind of fit a theme that was sports or stadium related. But you bought the works. Then you gradually got more adventurous and started commissioning artists to see where they would take it. And I think that's where it got really interesting. But this is a really beautiful painting that they bought early on by Wayne Gonzalez, a Los Angeles artist, that from a distance, from say 60 yards or 60 feet away, it looks like a very beautiful abstract painting. But it's an image of a crowd. And that was a theme that you wanted. And I know you liked that painting very much in the beginning. Can you talk just a little bit about how you first got involved in thinking that art could be a part of this stadium? Because that was you. You can't blame this on Jerry.
Well, you can't. I needed his
Jerry.
Support.
That was you.
So, well, as we moved into the building of the stadium, we got our plans made. We started selecting the finish outs. And we saw we really were going to have a very special building, and one that we were really going to be very proud of, and that we wanted our fans to be equally proud of. So we feel like we're going to have a great building. And I thought, every great building, every great home needs a piece of art. Great homes have great art. Great buildings should have great art. So I'm hoping our building is going to be great like that, and we really need it to have the art. So with that, I knew I didn't know anything about contemporary art. I did know that the building was going to be very contemporary, very futuristic. There was no question, but it had to be contemporary art. And I know nothing about contemporary art. I knew that it had to be respected in the art community. So I knew we needed some advisor. We needed someone to make sure we did it right. So with that, my good friend Gail Stoffel, who's here in the audience tonight, I saw her at a Christmas party, and I told her, Gail, I'm looking for an art advisor. How do I start finding one? I mean, how do I do that? And Gail is a major art collector and has a beautiful collection. She said, let me think about it. So sure enough, a few weeks or a month later, she calls me. And she said, I have three firms that I think could do what you want. So I contacted these three groups. And one of them was Mary Slott from San Francisco. And when I called Mary, we had just a great conversation, and she threw a lot of questions to me that I couldn't answer. What is your budget? What kind of art? What kind of medium? What artist do you like? And I had to let her know, well, that's why I'm calling you, because I don't know one artist that's a contemporary artist, and you're going to have to recommend. I do know it needs to be respected in the art community, and it would be great to be museum quality. So we had a few conversations. The last one I had with her, we hadn't signed a contract or anything. She's in Basel, Switzerland at the art fair, and she calls, Jean, I see a piece of art. It might just be great for a stadium. It's a crowd scene. It could be a football crowd. I'm not sure. But it's a crowd scene, and it takes a large wall because it's 21 feet wide and 7 feet tall. And I think it would work in your building. So, you know, I think about it a little bit. I don't know Wayne Gonzalez, but that means nothing because I don't know a lot of great artists. But I told her, I'll talk to Jerry, and he approved it, and we told her just to buy it for us. And we thought we knew where it would go, but we weren't sure. So Mary comes to Dallas, and we have several meetings with our architect, and we have our plans laid out, and our building is just going up, so there are no solid walls to know exactly by looking at the building without the plan which wall would take what kind of art. So Mary, together, we really felt like we needed an art committee, an art council, an advisory group to tell us and help us make these selections. So with that, we contacted, of course, Michael. Mm-hmm. It was so great that Michael was so willing to do this because I didn't even know Michael. And I certainly, through this time, I realized how lucky we were to have such a respected person in such a great museum as the one here in Fort Worth. And then we contacted Charlie Wiley from the museum in Dallas. And then we have two great major art collectors that were friends that agreed to serve on our board, Gail Stoffel and Howard Rachowski. So this group, together, they inherited the Gonzalez because they didn't select that. But Mary and I are still very proud that we bought that, and that's our first piece. So through the committee, we realized they could guide us and direct us on what would really be a very diverse group of artists, different in race and gender and geography and age whether the boy or a girl, the sex. So we did that, and they did such an excellent job because we have young artists and we have older artists, but all of the artists are museum quality, and we have had no one really criticize any of the selections that we made. So the art committee did an excellent job. Mary brought slide after slide to our meetings, and we met very, very frequently. We had a very short time because we wanted this for the opening of our building. And we were just a year and a half out from opening when we started our meetings. Right. So we really were in a tight time frame. And everyone was a little bit wondering, will an artist really want to be in a football stadium?
Right.
That really, I don't think artists in today's time have of that quality had been in a stadium before. Not, you know, not a football stadium. So they all came to visit our stadium. They saw our old stadium, and then they came to the job site for the new stadium, and they saw all of our plans and our renderings, and we just told them how much we needed them and wanted them, and their art would be respected, and we would treasure it and take care of it and not let any fan abuse it. And, you know, surprisingly, not one fan has abused the art. It's all been appreciated. It's been amazing. 100,000 people come to the stadium, and no one is wanting to do anything that would damage the art. So I think we're exposing the entire sport world into the art world, and they are all very excited about it, and we're just getting great reviews on it.
I think the artists, it's always a delicate line with public art, and artists needs to make a personal expression in a public space, and how far can they go, and then at what point do you censor an artist from doing something in a place where you expect people to act a certain way? And what was fascinating about this process was that the artists understood the degree of visibility that would be involved in this. They respected it. And then the other fascinating thing, even more fascinating to me, was the Joneses respected their willingness to do what they had to do. They didn't censor them in any way. Though, as the narrative developed, this is a piece by Doug Aiken, a very well-known Los Angeles artist, certain themes developed. The artists or the Joneses chose works that played into a theme like the Lone Star, which is the star of the Dallas Cowboys. Even, this is the interior of that Lone Star piece. Even Olafur Eliasson, who at the time that we were looking at art for the stadium, was having a show at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And he was approached about doing a piece for Cowboy Stadium. He said, absolutely, sounds great. And he also dealt with, this is called Fat Superstar, and it's made of colored glass and halogen light inside. And it overlooks an entrance to one of the clubs, and it literally shoots splinters of light around the room. It's a very, very beautiful piece. But then, you know, I think what surprised me more was that the Joneses were willing to deal with works like this, also by Olafur Eliasson, which is very delicate, very gentle. You know, a lot of people could walk through this stadium, particularly on game day, and not notice this. Mm-hmm. And it's a piece that takes a little time to appreciate and to see. But both Jerry and Jean and Charlotte, the whole family, said, you know, but this is interesting. This is good. This is a piece by Teresita Fernandez. I'm just going to run through a few here so people get an idea. And these are pieces, little cubes of colored glass embedded into a black wall. So it's on a 32-foot wall, and you're in a lobby, and it makes the lobby seem like it goes on forever. I mean, it's very, you know, it's not decorative. It actually takes the viewer participant beyond decoration. And then they got much more ambitious and began inviting artists to do very large-scale painted commissions. And this is a work by Gary Simmons, who interprets the idea of the sport of football as a collision or as an explosion. And this is like a modern fresco.
Let me inject one thing.
Please.
Gary Simmons was real excited about doing this. So when he comes to the stadium to actually install it, he had seen where he thought it was going to be. He saw the area. But then by the time the building, the ceilings were up and the steps were completed, he saw how high he was going to have to be on a scaffold. And he was afraid of heights. And he told us, I'm not sure if I can get up there. So we had to harness him in so that he wouldn't be afraid of falling. And it was just wonderful. He's so great. Excuse me for interrupting, but it's so fun.
These are like frescoes. They're like modern or contemporary frescoes. They're inviting artists in to specifically paint the walls of this. And as Jean pointed out earlier, this was 6 months before your opening. Not before your first game, but you had a lot of events coming up.
In the spring.
And I was stunned that it got done.
Michael, will you reverse one back, please?
Sure.
Go one back. Because we all know what the Kimball... No,
the Gary
one
Simmons.
More. The Gary Simmons.
The first vision.
The next,
there.
Right there.
Oops, sorry.
Right there.
I'll get it.
But anyway, we have such an appreciation for this gorgeous, gorgeous Kimball and the building and where the art is presented. And what I must point out is as you look at the art, look below and look at the corridor and look at the epoxy flooring that's on there, and look at the stone that's up against the integrated stone. And a major part of our enthusiasm for what we can do and have done, but do in the future relative to presenting the art, has to do with how the art is presented. Now, on a game day, there are literally thousands of people in here, but the presentation of it, the cleanliness of it, the attention to detail of the flooring, all of that inspires us to basically present and talk to artists about presenting their art there. By the way, if you don't think Al Michaels doesn't know how to see that and then articulate it when he's talking to 20 million people, and that's how many he's talking to. When he's talking to 20 million people and talk about it, he can. And all that says to me is what an opportunity to get people a bite of the apple of what art can be about and the presentation of it.
And, you know, there are artists who have said to me, well, you know, you have to compromise yourself so much in these public situations. But I know a lot of artists who are very smart about this. And if Al Michaels can use this art as a talking point, 20 million people in a 30-second soundbite.
Yes.
These artists get it. Artists today understand that they're not bohemians sitting in a garret. I mean, they understand that art is part of a larger entertainment system. And I think that's what you're,
Michael,
that's what you're doing.
Yes, without belaboring the point in these good people's time, the thing that the Dallas Cowboys have is we're the number one programming in all of television, not just the NFL, but in all of television. More people tune in to watch your Dallas Cowboys play than any other programming there is. If you can have something that has stature, something that has credibility, and I don't mind telling you, when Gene and Michael and Charles and everyone showed me this, I said, where's my cowboy player? Where's my guy star on his helmet?
Right, exactly.
And I quickly got some great coaching, which contrary to any of you sports reporters that are in this room, I do listen to the coach. And I'm not calling the plays, and these guys didn't have me calling the plays when they made that above the concession stand at that particular location. They were calling the plays. I was a good listener.
Well, I have to say I was stunned because some of the most difficult areas of the stadium were these areas above the concession, and you have a lot of transients, a lot of movement. You've got the smell of hot dogs. You want people having to go to the bathroom. They want to get their food. What do you put up there? Not to mention the fact this is directly above the concessions. I'm assuming, Jerry, you could have sold some of this real estate to Pepsi or Coke.
Of course.
But rather, you paid artists to put some stuff up there.
Exactly.
Exactly. So you lost money twice.
Well,
basically.
Michael, I would hope that that little spot that Pepsi's in, which you can't see, I hope they would appreciate how much more it's worth with all that art around.
And I think I agree.
You can rationalize anything.
Good job.
This is a stunning piece by Terry Haggerty, who was born in Britain but works in Berlin. And he does these beautiful things that sort of, what began to happen after I think some of the artists were addressing the theme of the star and the theme of sports and cowboys, was that they started to address the architecture itself and kind of bend it and twist it a little bit, play with it. And that's part of what makes these pieces really interesting to me.
Go back one and show them that little brush that Terry is using.
Yeah, look at how little the brush is.
That brush
is
about like your eyeliner brush. And he is going on the edge of that red to make that line so sharp and crisp. All these artists were so proud of their work, and they stayed longer than they anticipated to make sure that it was just perfect and just made everyone so proud.
Michael, I know this is a given in this room, but that's on a flat surface.
Yes.
That's not an extended or multi-level surface. That's flat.
And it's an illusion that if you look at the ribbon, when you first look up, I'm sure the average person who goes in there, and I would be an average person, would say, looks like some stripes. And then you look up and you go, no, it's a lot more complicated than that. And it's also an illusion that could not take place in real space. That ribbon could not do that. He had to create that illusion. And, you know, presumably somebody, maybe an 8-year-old, maybe an 80-year-old, looks up on the way to a hot dog and goes, wow, that's, you know.
Piece of candy.
And Ricky Albenda, a New York artist, also kind of torqued the architecture a bit. I think there are 24 aluminum painted panels.
Yes. That's not flat.
That is not flat. And these are above the concession stands. I mean, people do look. And I'm sure you have had comments from other than quote-unquote art people about this.
When we interviewed, we'd already decided that Dave Muller would be one of our artists, and he's the one with the yellow rose and the popcorn. So as I'm visiting with him, he said when he was thinking about what would go above the concession stand, he was thinking, if I were a child or even an adult standing in line waiting and waiting on my turn to order my popcorn and hot dog, what would entertain me while I just stand there and wait my turn? And I think he just thought the art, a lot of people would look up and see that art and would be a great way to spend their time while they're waiting in line, you know, to buy their refreshments.
And this is a piece by Franz Ackermann, an artist who has a studio in Berlin. Relatively young artist, and he has done this immense expressionist painting. I mean, this takes up a lot of square footage. And I remember he's a very charming artist, very interesting artist. His art is diaristic, but it is not literally a narrative. It is a series of codes, and the codes are based on color and on shape, and they're not anything that any one of us would get specifically or that he defines specifically, but they are diaristic. So this is a piece about traveling from Berlin to Texas, and it covers a huge amount of space in the stadium. And I remember there was some concern about this, a little nerves about this, about the color. Was this going to,
for me,
was this going to freak some people out? Was it going to go wrong? Would people get it?
I was the most nervous about the color.
Yeah.
And it's turned out just what the stadium needed. The pop of color has just been fabulous because everything is monochromatic in the stadium. And then you get that bright color. And I really was nervous about it because we kind of did start off with very little color, maybe a little blue. But it's turned out fabulous.
I mean, there was some question of whether all of this color and all of this expression would disorient people. Ironically, you know, it's called Meet Me at the Waterfall. It's like this waterfall of color. And, you know, ironically, it's where people go, well, I'll meet you at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it not only did it not disorient them, it gave them an anchor of a place
I think so.
To meet.
Michael, I've alluded to this earlier, but it's a point. You talk about risks. We are so fortunate to be associated with the Dallas Cowboys and the great generations of fans that are there. You can bump it around real good, and it comes back ticking every time. And it comes back through a deep-seated generational interest that is there. And it manifests itself in television. You're talking about fight. Those networks, they will have a knockdown dragout over who gets to show Dallas Cowboy football games. We learned again, I want to emphasize this, that we could expand the envelope and associate different interests. The Salvation Army did that. When I travel across the country, I'm not exaggerating, I'll have as many people walk up to me and say thank you for the Salvation Army as I do Go Cowboys. Mm. And there's a lot of interest around there. So if anyone in sport, anyone could have risks or gotten extended themselves into the realm of interest and association, but we're the team that could have done that. Mm-hmm. We could have done that. Now, don't get me wrong. We were holding our fanny a little bit when we were thinking about it. And grab on. I was sitting with one of our former coaches the other day, and I was asking him what would happen. We were watching a college game, and I said, "What would you do going into the fourth quarter? How would you do strategy wise?" And he said, "I would hold on with both hands because they're coming." That was his comment. A former coach. So, you know, you do know that you're into the unknown,
right?
Here. And we knew we were into the unknown when we were talking about that stadium and some of the things we were doing on the stadium. But we have the luxury of being able to do it, and that is a product. Everybody should take ownership in this. Everybody that has ever been involved in supporting this organization, this team, in its own way, sport. And so I can hold my head high when I look over to... And I'm with a room full of nothing but football people or sports people, and I can hold my head high and say, "Guys, we got to go for this. We've got to do these things. This is our spot. This is our time to do it."
This was another. And I'll remind Gene. I don't know if you remember
yes.
this, Jerry, but this was a point of contention. This is an artist named Trent Hancock from Houston, and his art is based on this mythology of characters that he's developed to inhabit this forest. And one of the main characters is this mound, but there are other characters involved, and it's a little weird. There's no question about it. I can't say I get it, and I support him as an artist. So trying to explain this to Gene and Jerry was strange. But then the first proposal that Trent made was full of snakes, and you hate snakes. I mean, you really hate snakes.
Scared
to death
phobia.
Of snakes.
Phobia.
A phobia.
And I hate snakes, too, but not as much as you, I don't think. And so this was a case where, you know, we had to go back to the artist and say, "Look, client hates snakes. I mean, I don't know what to tell you here. This is the way it goes." And Trent is a grown-up, and he said, "Fine, I'll figure something else out," and we proceeded. And it's now in this area where there was this long ramp, and it goes down into you look down on it against this huge wall, and it looks like this sort of active garden. It's almost looking into a terrarium with these little creatures in it, and there's no question it's one of the weirder pieces in the collection, and I think that's a good thing. Don't you?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah.
Hey, and Michael, I'm still selling it. And
I'm
Michael,
still
I'm not.
Selling it.
Don't bet any money. I'm not so sure there's not a snake in there.
No.
I know Trent. There is a snake in there, Jerry.
Oh, don't
I know this
tell
guy.
Me.
If I were him, I would have put one in there someplace.
Yeah, you betcha. You betcha. And then there are other artists. This is a very well-known artist from France named Daniel Buren, and he does these things that are abstract, but they're related to the idea that you look at them, you think that you're going to see a pattern, you try to develop a pattern in your mind, and at every move he shifts it a little bit so that you can't put it together. Again, this is above the concessions. So it blends in and sticks out at the same time. And this is a beautiful piece by Jim Iserman, an LA artist. It's made of, it's plastic, it's a vacuum form styrene units. Mm-hmm. They're like 6 feet each, and they kind of bulge out. So it looks like the wall is swelling, and it's breathing. And it's somewhere between design, sculpture, and architecture, but it fits so beautifully into the to the aesthetics of the stadium. And he's a very well-known contemporary cutting-edge artist.
Remember, that was originally, it had depth, and you were worried about the how we would clean it.
Right.
And so he changed that, you know, and now it doesn't have the little indentions like it did before.
Well, it's a stunning, it's a stunning piece. And this, I put this in only to remind us that we are in a football stadium. And that there is testosterone running around. I just, you know, I just needed to put something in that wasn't hard.
Michael, the biggest and most volume of suggestions I get are as to the huge digital board that's there, that we're very cautious about what we put on it. And it usually says, could we have more replays or even better, more cheerleader shots?
There you go. There you go.
So it's alive and well.
Well, I know that people go through that same and go, now that's my kind of art. You know, and I've probably said that myself. But but what amazes me is that we could put art in a stadium that was subtle. And this is a piece by Annette Lawrence, an artist who works in Denton. And it's this beautiful piece of stretched steel cable that the cable stretches from one wall to the other across a very large span. It's like piano wire being pulled taut. And it twists, it looks like two cones kind of twisting together. When you see it, you kind of see this blur. And there's this little buzz of movement. And she calls it coin toss, which is if you were to toss a coin in the air and it was spinning fast enough, it would look like this sort of this geometric ghost spinning. It's very subtle. It's very daring of you to put this in a main entrance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
it's
not
perfect, though.
It's beautiful. This is a piece by Lawrence Weiner, who gave a lecture here last week. Lawrence was here, and you know, Lawrence is someone who takes language and uses that language to point out the specificity of a material or a context. And in this case, it's the context of the game, which is brought up to speed, you know, brought down to earth, catch as catch can. You know, what I love about it is it reads like art, and well, it looks like art and reads like football. You know, and Lawrence has been around a long time and is a major figure in the development of conceptual art, but saw this stadium as a place that he could do something important. And this is entering, which entrance?
One of our four entrances.
Four entrances.
And so this is maybe G.
G. And this is a piece by Matthew Ritchie. And at first it looks like these sort of tentacles of underwater creatures. It looks very abstract. And then as you look at it more carefully, you see that what he's done is he's computerized all of the marks that a coach would make on a pad to denote a play, you know, with X's and O's, mm-hmm, and a line moving around. And yet you don't read it as that at all. But I'm sure a football person could pick it up. So I'm just, starting the conclusion, I would just say, I want to show some of the other art and entertainment things that you have engaged since the opening of this stadium, which this was the set for U2, which is amazing. They had to remove, did you move? To
raised it.
Raised it
high enough, which was, we were very reluctant to do. And but they spent $60 million on this set. And not just for this performance, they move it around the country. But they were pretty proud of their set. We were pretty proud of our digital board. The two strong wills, mm-hmm, came together. I moved the board to get you two.
You've had you two, Paul McCartney, NBA Finals, Is that a tractor pull? I don't know what that is going on
truck,
there.
Truck thing.
Truck thing. That's good.
I'm sorry, I don't go to all of them.
I like truck thing. I like truck thing. I'm going to call it that.
Motorcycles, bull riding. I tried to get the whole thing here. So really what we are talking about, and you brought it up earlier, is the Colosseum.
At the end of the day,
that's what they did at the Colosseum.
Mike, let me just make this comment. Let's use an example of a very significant fight. And again, what's fight got to do with art? A little more than you might think. But when we did the fight with HBO, HBO wanted to put that in about to about 9 million people with about 1 million home buys. It was a pay-per-view, and it was HBO. My dog in the fight was, okay, and I'm not in the HBO business of selling fights. What I want to do is make sure that the some 3 billion people exposed to this fight free around the world, not in the U.S. where it was pay-per-view, but I want to make sure that those 3 billion, which ultimately was over a billion people, and what I want you to do is shoot this fight different than any you've ever done. And I want you to show this fight, and I will pay for the cameras, and I'll pay for the camera flying overhead. And we want to show this fight, and you've got to agree to do it, by showing the architecture. We want you to show the stadium. I want this to be a sales job worldwide for that many people to see this stadium. And I do that every day. I do that every time we have an event out there. My dog in the fight, again, is to promote the stadium. Now, in the end, the venue can be a big asset to the art that's in it because it crosses a lot of people's interests. It creates a lot of visibility that is there. And again, just think about it. Our thought about a ball game has 100,000 people going to the game. We know 100,000 people can't see every piece of art. Now, we can put it up on that big screen for them at different intervals, subtly done throughout the game, so that when they go home, they felt like they've made an art tour. But that's 100,000 people. How do we get it to where it just might be the subject to 20 million people at that particular time? And then how can we create that bite of the apple interest that might develop into more? What I would represent to you, Michael, is that it's at the tip of the iceberg for the Cowboys and that stadium's interest in what we can do and attempt to do, not being presumptuous about having the depth that we need to have, but what can we attempt to do about creating interest in art, which should lift all boats. It really should. It should make the Kimball, it should, when I say, and again, I'm not being presumptuous, but we're in the world, let's be real, we're in the world of soliciting people's interest and then them biting the apple and growing from that. And hopefully we can do that. The good news is that we have had a taste of success, I think. The other thing I want to say before I shut up is that you were dealing, Charles, Wiley, y'all were dealing, you were my heart surgeon. This, you couldn't have been the head coach before the Super Bowl and been dealing with a something more sensitive than we were about this stadium. We literally had put it on the line for this. Just as when we bought the Cowboys, this was the next thing that we did to put it on the line. Someone could have told me that we'd be talking about spending $1.2 billion on something and then be sitting here putting an entrance that had that art that you just saw described up there.
Exactly.
And I thought, now, my goodness, out now. This is. Let's all have our hand on the throttle as we take off here together so we don't have any mistakes. But it is rewarding, and what is inspirational is you.
Yeah.
tremendously inspirational have that.
Charles, the Cowboys, like that. We'll open it up for questions for about 10 minutes, but I would also say the Cowboys, those of you that are sports fans know that this family actually went against the NFL when it came to branding their team. They said, we're going to merchandise our own stuff. We're not sharing with the Green Bay Packers, with the New York Jets. Said, we'll merchandise our stuff, you merchandise your stuff. And that was going against the big boys in the NFL, and now they all thank you for it. So anyway, if we could open it up for some questions. Yes.
Very definitely, we are. And since we had our opening, we've added some smaller pieces of art in some of the smaller areas, and some of that is by some nice artists. Not quite as respected as the larger pieces; they're more minimal pieces. And then we have added actually some. Sports images in our corridors. There are a lot of our fans that still want to see the Roger Staubachs and the players of the past. So we have really done our research and gotten a lot of old pictures that we have added from the beginning of time with the Cowboys that we have put in the corridors. And so next we have lots of walls that are ready for new art and maybe even outside.
Was some of the art painted right on the concrete wall and others painted on canvas or something and then attached to the wall?
Both.
Every piece was different, about.
Mm-hmm.
Had to do a lot of preparation. I mean, thank goodness we still had our contractors on the job because the walls did have to be prepared for what the artist was going to do. Like Annette Lawrence with her coin toss. Those walls were not built to have such strength pulling against them, so they had to take those walls out and put all this steel behind it so that those cable wires would not pull the walls down. And every situation was different.
And I have to say, I've been an artist in these various situations before. The Cowboys Corporation treated the artist with the greatest respect. I was stunned. I mean, usually it's like, get out of, what are you doing? Artist, get out of the way. We got other stuff to move in here. But they were treated with great respect, and every one of these artists that I've talked to were very appreciative. It sounds like I'm blowing sunshine out here, but it's absolutely true. You can talk to any of these artists.
Yeah. Can you talk about the economic impact that's being forecast for the Super Bowl that we're going to have in February?
Yes. First of all, I'm a great believer that the impact is ratio that the dynamics of once you spend a dollar here, it adds $2 here, it adds $3 there. I know firsthand that is the fact that works. And there is no doubt that the star of this Super Bowl, the star, will be this stadium.
Yeah, for sure.
There is no doubt. If y'all think that I haven't spent countless hours lobbying, calling in whatever I can call in to make sure that Fox makes this something special. Gene, before the Super Bowl, I don't know if it's going to be hours before or what have you, but Gene's going to give a personal tour of the art before the Super Bowl. Now, there's a billion people watching this Super Bowl. Now, they may not be all tuned in at that time, but 130 million people in the United States are going to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to personally show, many of you may not even be familiar, but Jimmy Johnson was a roommate of mine and the first coach that I ever hired when we bought the Cowboys. I'm going to personally give Jimmy a tour of it on Super Bowl Day, of the stadium on Super Bowl Day. So that we really have are going to...
That Terry Haggerty looks a little like his hair.
He certainly does. Yes.
You can tell him.
I'll tell him you said that. But we want to. It's easy to talk about the ratios that happen economically when you fill hotels and when you buy. And We know all the arguments. It's well recognized that it's a positive. I think the thing that is important is that we want to have more Super Bowls, and we have such a unified Mayor Moncrief and Rosie and the support that we have here in Fort Worth, and the fact that the AFC is going to be over here in Fort Worth, which is the team, one of the teams that will play, and all of the things that are going on there. We want Fort Worth to get such a, and Tarrant County really, to get such a big impact from this. In our Texas stadium, 6% of our fans were from Texas, from Tarrant County. 6%. Right at 40 are in our stadium now from Tarrant County. 40% of our fans in the stadium are there. Now, that has a lot of different dynamic. The main thing is that when Texas Stadium was built, the ones that got the invitation early on were more oriented in Dallas County. That changed here, but it truly is a major impetus, and it should have ongoing positiveness, because you've had a collective working together effort by I think we've got 31 mayors that are involved in North Texas's effort for the Super Bowl.
Well, I'm going to close this by saying thank you both so much. Yeah, I know you're really, really busy, and I really appreciate you coming.
Well, you're busy too.
Thank you.
I do know this is the, I must say this, Michael, and Gene reminded me, when you spit out as much as I do, you're allowed one or two mistakes. And I do know this is not the Kimball, okay? It is the Modern.
Okay, good. Thank you. Here, here.
The Modern.
Thank you, guys. You guys did great.
Fun.
Right.